Have you ever heard of the energy trilemma? Well, it goes something like this. How do you create an energy supply that is both green, affordable, and secure all at the same time? As the geopolitical events of the past few years have shown, it is an ideal that is difficult to uphold. However, those same events have also made it clear that we can't let the flow of renewable energy be constrained by borders if we want to see the green transition through. To be sure, distributing energy across borders and connecting both grids and markets requires a complex level of collaboration, one that Denmark has long succeeded in. You're listening to Sound of Green, a podcast from State of Green. Each episode, we invite experts and stakeholders to convey Danish perspectives on a given challenge of the global green transition. Through decades of experience, Denmark has turned many of these challenges into opportunities. By sharing these experiences, we hope to help you do the same. In this episode, we explore the potentials of increased grid and market interconnectivity and tell the story of how Denmark and the UK came together to build the world's longest interconnector. If there's one word you're going to hear a lot during this episode, it's the word interconnector. An interconnector is a high-voltage transmission cable that links the power grids of two different regions or countries, allowing for energy to flow between them. Like many other solutions in the green transition, interconnectors are a tried and tested technology that has been around for a long time.
So the interconnectors is not a new thing. They have existed for many, many years. I would say initially they had mostly a merchant or a commercial value. So you could basically make money by sending surplus energy from one country or one region to another part where they were in deficit. That, of course, is still very much a business model.
This is Mikael Hjort, the chief commercial officer at NKT. NKT is a power cable provider, which makes them a central actor in upgrading the European distributions grid by connecting regions and countries via interconnectors. And as Mikael states, while the commercial value of trading energy is still relevant as ever, today, interconnectors also have an even more important purpose in the green transition.
But interconnectors is growing in importance also from another more technical aspect, and that is the balancing of power in the various grids.
Most of the renewable energy sources that we plan to integrate into our power grids are intermittent. They do not deliver a continuous flow of energy, as they depend on the forces of nature. And although there's broad agreement that the build-out of renewable energy is the key to a sustainable future, intermittency requires more flexibility in our energy systems to balance supply and demand.
But it also creates a different type of energy system because it's more intermittent, okay? And so you need other sources of flexibility on the grid to balance that intermittency when the wind doesn't blow.
This is Rebecca Settler, the managing director of the interconnectors business at the UK energy company National Grid. National Grid owns and maintains the high-voltage electricity transmission network in England and Wales, and are thus responsible for cross-border connections to that grid. And as she explains, those cross-border connections ensure that power flows to markets where it's needed.
Interconnectors provide flexibility to manage those peaks and troughs because they are very large assets, so they shift large sources of power. And the electrons simply respond to market signals. So, for example, where there's an abundance of wind and it's more than demand can cope with, when supply basically maxes over demand, prices will go very, very low. And that will mean UK energy prices are cheap. And that will mean that UK interconnectors can export to other countries, which may not have such cheap prices. And of course, it works the other way around.
In Denmark, interconnectors have long been recognized as a key asset to a sustainable energy system.
Denmark is a very interconnected. And if you look at a European level, you would find Denmark at the top. And the story started in the 1960s. So it's almost 60 years ago, actually, that we started with the first interconnectors.
This is Christopher Bøtzau, the director of the Danish Energy Agency. And as he explains, the first interconnectors connected Denmark to the nearby energy markets to great benefit.
Yeah, well, if you look at our closest neighbors, you can see that interconnectors give us the possibility for sharing Danish wind power. And at the same time, be connected to Norwegian hydropower, Swedish nuclear power, and German solar. And it gives security of supply, it gives you low energy prices, and it gives you renewable energy. So being interconnected to our Nordic neighbors is very important.
Today, Denmark has cross-border connections with Sweden, Norway, Germany, and the Netherlands. And this year, a new country and a new record-breaking interconnector was added to that list. The 18th of April, 2024, marked the official inauguration of the world's longest electricity cable connection, Viking Link, between Denmark and the United Kingdom. It was the culmination of 13 years of hard work that all started with a case based on societal welfare, as Rebecca Settler from National Grid states.
As part of the strategy for the business, we were looking at where there would be most consumer value, societal value, so carbon reductions, energy security, through connections with different countries. And it's typical that we do assessments using market fundamentals and forecasts of how those energy systems will evolve with different countries and compare them to the UK and see where a project could emerge.
A dialogue was initiated between National Grid and the Danish Transmission System Operator, or TSO, Energinet, to explore the compatibility between the two energy systems. They emerged with a business case that was then agreed upon politically in both countries. This is how most interconnector projects develop. However, the distance and the sea between Denmark and the UK made for an extraordinary challenge.
Of course, even with that, you have to consider the engineering, the physical challenge of actually building the link. And of course, Viking Link is the longest land and subsea cable in the world. In fact, we have a Guinness World Record for this project. It's round about 750 kilometers in total.
In general, because sharing energy between two countries via an interconnector is a massive feat of engineering and technology, interconnector projects can be seen as enablers of technology development, as Mikael Hjort from NKT explains.
Interconnectors is actually projects with the potential to drive technology evolution, typically because they are pretty large, very long cable stretches, or they have to cross deep water. Also, the need for transmitting huge amounts of power also drives then technology towards higher voltage ranges. So just for comparison, if you look into the socket you have in the wall, there you have 220 volts. So we're talking about systems that are now 2,000 times stronger than what power you can get out of your socket. So there has been a huge technology development there.
Viking Link is very much a reflection of this development, given its record-breaking scale. But as Christopher Bøtzau of the Danish Energy Agency points out, Viking Link also reflects another crucial development in the effort to stabilize our energy systems.
The reason why this is so groundbreaking is, of course, the size of the interconnector, but it's also that you connect different time zones, which compared to our Nordic neighbors in Germany and the Netherlands gives us new possibilities. Because if you're connecting different time zones, you're also connecting different consumer patterns and different energy peak load times.
In other words, to truly reap the benefits of connecting two energy systems and markets, you must consider their compatibility beyond the feasibility of developing the link itself. you also need to think about when the consumers in those markets use the energy. When things like mealtimes might affect the strain on a given energy system, as well as the weather patterns in the respective geographies that affect energy scarcity or excess. So, while interconnectors are essentially just tools that respond to market signals, operating them is a complex exercise, as Rebecca Settler can attest to.
They have the capability of providing huge amounts of electricity from one country to another, and they can flip direction in seconds. And that requires very cooperative operational arrangements by both of the countries, both of the TSOs, and political partnership, you know, on how we're going to use these assets.
This inherent need for strong collaboration on interconnectors is also present in the development and building phases of these mammoth cross-border projects. And in Mikael Hjort's experience, that requires a great deal of transparency and flexibility on the part of the solution provider.
And sometimes you can feel almost like when you have an interconnected project, you become an interpreter in the middle of those two clients. And we need to make sure that the project fits both ways. I would say the nature of the interconnected projects carry with itself, because of the size and the duration, a higher degree of uncertainty and a need for more flexibility on a company like NKT to be able to manage this successfully throughout the project phase.
The story of Viking Link puts into perspective just how impressive it is to complete a long-term, big, green infrastructure project in a world where multiple crises could just as easily have derailed the endeavor, as Rebecca Settler reflects.
I think it's really important to consider what has happened in 13 years since the conception of Viking Link. This project has had to deliver through Brexit. It's had to deliver through COVID, right? The construction project through COVID. And it's had to deliver through the Ukraine war.
Even with these immense challenges, collaboration and safety remained top priorities throughout the project and were instrumental in ensuring that Viking Link was completed as planned, and even with a bit of time to spare.
So regardless of the different challenges that have been thrown, you know, people coming together, people working together with the right spirit to make it happen. And of course, all of that is based on safety first. You know, you're talking about big mechanical engineering, construction activities that have many risks, that hold dangers to people. And everything has been based on the well-being, health and safety of all the people involved in the project. So, you know, not unrealistic deadlines, ensuring that this project timelines are sensible, ensuring that people aren't just getting hammered and hammered and hammered to deliver under incredible pressure. But ultimately, Viking Link was delivered on time and to budget. In fact, it was delivered a few days ahead of time because no one wanted to be there switching it on at midnight on New Year's Eve.
Importantly, Viking Link represents more than a singular achievement in green infrastructure and cross-border collaboration. It's also a crucial step in the political ambitions for the build-out of renewables on the European continent, as Christopher Bützau of the Danish Energy Agency states.
Well, I'm very excited about the targets and the ideas of building out the North Sea and the Baltic Sea. And some of the most important part of this vision is huge build out of interconnectors. And I do believe that actually Viking Link shows that it's doable and it's payable.
Interconnectors will play a central role in the green transition of Europe as electrification moves along and the demand for cheap renewable power increases. And from a Danish perspective, we need interconnectors to make our contribution to the green transition count.
We are in a position where we can produce much more energy than we will use for ourselves. So I think we have a responsibility to help this transition in Europe and bring our green renewable power into the market. And to do that, we need interconnectors.
However, long-term complex infrastructure projects like interconnectors are neither cheap nor easy to build. And from Mikael Hjort's side of the table as a solution provider, this means that the financial risks of entering such projects must be mitigated.
And when we have to make these investments, we need some certain level of visibility on the pipeline of projects. Will they happen? Will they not happen? When will they happen? What is going to be the activity level? Can we rely upon this investment to actually be utilized? Can we make money on it? Because we don't want to put money into factories or into resources, people, if we do not have a reasonably good visibility that we will also get a return on that investment.
It's clear that the sheer scale of infrastructure needed to support the energy transition requires staggering amounts of money. Last year, the European Union suggested that 600 billion euros must be invested in European grids by 2030 to see it through. But as Mikael just alluded to, it's also a question of human resources and aligning cross-sector activities. This is very much top of mind for Rebecca Settler, as National Grid prepares for upcoming projects.
Because the amount of capex that needs to be spent to deliver the transmission to support the energy transition is so vast, it's like eye-watering. And of course, this is putting a huge amount of pressure on our supply chains and our skills. So I think these are really important areas where they may involve policy or not, where we all need to come together as a sector to work out what the solution is. It's not simply having a plan, here are a few projects, let's just do the order. I mean,
news of green infrastructure tenders with no bids or flagship projects that are temporarily halted or even cancelled altogether have become more and more commonplace over the past few years. And what this suggests is that there's still a gap to be bridged between political and commercial ambitions on the one hand and sustainable financing models on the other.
Recognizing that projects need to have a sensible return, not an excessive one, but a sensible return that encourages investment and that will encourage the project to be built. Just getting the regulatory deal or getting a CFD is not the project actually being built and becoming, you know, operational infrastructure.
Both private and public actors have opportunities to contribute to a more encouraging environment for investment. From a company perspective, one way to attract investment is to show commitment to the green transition by taking steps to embody it internally. This is something that NKT has been working on for the past few years.
We started on this journey back in 2018, 2019, looking what can we do? Not because somebody told us to do it, but we felt it was needed if we wanted to be a reliable partner in the green transition sector.
Since then, NKT has made the decision to only use renewable energy at their manufacturing sites, as well as started the transition to electrical company cars, aiming for a fully electrical car fleet by 2025. And although these initiatives come with a cost, it's an important market signal to send, as Mikael Hjort states.
We have to accept the fact that if we want everything to become greener in the future, there will be also a price to pay, at least in a transition period. But as a company that is so inherently engaged in the green transition, we feel also an obligation to make steps ourselves and to offer them to the market as steps in the right direction. We will not cross the finish line before we have decarbonized the whole value chain.
From a government perspective, one of the crucial challenges of constructing a good business case for interconnectors is cost sharing. Since interconnectors connect both the grids and markets of two countries, how to best share the costs and gains becomes a political question, as Christopher Bützau from the Danish Energy Agency explains.
Talking about interconnectors is also talking about cost sharing. And that's a negotiation between the countries. One of the questions that we're looking very much into at the moment is who will bear the financial burden? Will the non-hosting countries that are benefiting from these projects also be part of the financing for the projects? Because at the moment, it often would be the host country that will have most of the cost.
When Christopher mentions hosting and non-hosting countries here, he's talking about who hosts the renewable energy assets from which the transmitted energy will flow. And those assets cost money, including taxpayer money, to build. So, if they're connected to another country who will be able to import cheap green energy for its citizens, there's a political argument to be made for fair cost sharing. Otherwise, it might deter cooperation in the future.
So we need to find a business case where it's both good for the hosting country like Denmark and for the importing country. So it's very important at an EU level and for the new commission to look more closely into how to solve financing problems in the future.
On the Viking Link, Denmark primarily acts as the exporter of electricity, making the UK the importer the majority of the time. And being in that position has its own form of risk and vulnerability, as Rebecca Settler explains.
On one hand, you're saying, okay, well, if I'm using these interconnectors to import, clearly I'm importing cheaper energy from other countries, so my consumers have a benefit, right? But the counter argument to that doesn't sound very secure. You know, that sounds like you're very reliant on these interconnectors and on other countries participating to meet the peak of your demand. What happens if there's another crisis? Are you too reliant if you're a net importer all the time?
When asked about the solution to the dilemmas of cost and risk, Rebecca underlines the importance of seeing interconnectors as a stabilizing force for common good rather than a zero-sum equation.
Without an interconnectors providing other routes to market, what would you do with the renewable energy? So again, it's about thinking of the interconnectors as optionality, as flexibility for the system. They shouldn't be thought about as a generation source. They're not a generation source. They're a transport source, you know, they're transmission.
Viking Link is a prime example of a balanced business case that made sense for both countries. They get to balance their peak loads, increase their energy security, and most importantly, provide affordable green energy as a tangible alternative to fossil fuels.
We've already delivered carbon savings into the UK that equate to taking tens and tens of thousands of cars, of combustion engine cars off the road this year. So we're already seeing the incredible carbon savings that a project like Viking Link delivers. And this is because if it wasn't there and it wasn't importing when the UK needed it, we would be running gas turbines. So what it's doing is effectively substituting that gas at the peak of the demand.
There's still one major challenge in the build-out of interconnectors that we have yet to address. Because even if we manage to sufficiently encourage investment and balanced cooperation, we can't share renewable energy across borders if our grids aren't built to handle it. And as Mikael Hjort from NKT explains, this is the predicament that most of Europe is currently in.
It is a bit, crazy and sad at the same time. So we have been focusing on the put up wind farms and put up solar farms. And we didn't actually, as societies, we didn't invest enough in the grid strengthening and the grid enlargement. So what we have encountered now is the curtailment. So we have, the generation of energy when it's windy and the sun is shining. We basically, in a lot of parts of Europe, we start generating more energy than we can consume. And if you do not have a grid that is big enough and strong enough to send it somewhere else where it can be consumed, then you basically need to shut it off. And now we're in a catch-up game. Now it needs to be done in parallel. We need to get this grid reinforcement done very quickly.
This need for alignment of the build-out of grids and renewable assets is all the more present if you consider the extremely ambitious targets for renewable energy capacity set by the European Union, as Rebecca Settler from National Grid points out.
What we have to do in my opinion, and many other of my colleagues in European TSOs, is coordinate this infrastructure and provide developers with incentives to come together, to share costs for the benefit of consumers, for the benefit of communities, and, you know, for the benefit of society. If you have a look, not if we forget the UK, and you have a look at the European offshore wind targets, 300 gigawatts, right, by 2050, if all of that is radially connected, right? So every single one has a cable going back connecting to a different substation. I mean, something must have gone wrong, right? That cannot be the most efficient way to do it.
One might ask, well, with such big European and national ambitions for the build-out of renewable energy, won't the build-out of interconnectors eventually be redundant? Why should we pour money into them if we're all going to end up with sovereign green assets anyway? To Rebecca, the answer is really quite simple.
And my counter to that is, do people know how long it takes to build transmission? It will be decades and decades before transmission is built, generation assets are built, and scarcity is the same, causing exactly the same market prices from the UK to other countries, causing redundancy in interconnectors. And in the meantime, we want to build the assets, we want to support renewable intermittency, we want to deliver value for consumers.
It's hopefully clear by now that interconnectors are key to a balanced energy system. And to meet the challenges that come with betting on big, complex infrastructure and aligning project buildouts on both grid and renewables, it's important that developers are given the clarity they need to commit resources, as Mikael Hjort argues.
So what is really needed is visibility and reliable long-term commitments. Our recommendation into the governments would be to really organize, I would say, the whole regime around auctions and project awards so that we have a laminar flow of projects meeting year on year the demand and the growth that is needed. We cannot catch up everything in the last few years. It's just not physically possible.
However, the Danish experience with interconnectors over the past 60 years suggests that there's a way forward. This is why Christopher Bützau and his colleagues at the Danish Energy Agency are working to ensure that those experiences travel beyond Danish borders.
And in the Danish Energy Agency, we have more than 20 international partnership countries. And we already have a lot of questions regarding our interconnectors. And I do believe that many countries could gain of our experience. I think, even though it's complex, it's manageable. And you could say we have several interconnectors in Denmark. And we have been doing this without huge problems. And we are looking at new interconnectors as well. So it's not a barrier that we cannot overcome.
Ultimately, there seems to be a consensus and a confidence that despite the challenges, the development of interconnectors like Viking Link is worthwhile, valuable, and will be the cornerstone of a green, affordable, and secure supply of energy across Europe.
You know, at NKT, we see a future where we will have a lot more interconnectors coming back now full circle to where we started the discussion. We will see more interconnectors because we need them in a more variable or more intermittent power system. So for balancing out and making sure that we can send energy forth and back. We think ultimately, if we take Europe, we will end up seeing all of Europe connected.
What's actually happening is that the interconnectors deliver far more value than we have envisaged. I'm really excited to see how it's going to develop over the next years.
Well, interconnectors is the answer for a large part of the energy trilemma, where you are looking at how to create an energy system with renewable energy, a high security of supply, and at low cost. So we need to look more and more into how to interlink demand and supply, countries, regions, and continents in the future. And interconnectors is the way to do it. I believe that the North Sea region will be the main power hub for renewable energy for, let's say, all Europe within the next decades.
How does that make you feel? Is it exciting?
Yes, it's very exciting.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sound of Green. We want to give a special thanks to Michael Hjort from NKT, Rebecca Settler from National Grid, and Christopher Bützau from the Danish Energy Agency, as well as the British Embassy in Denmark for making this episode possible. If you want to learn more about the financing of green infrastructure projects, we actually have an episode on just that, so go check that out. And as always, you can visit our website, stateofgreen.com, to dive deeper into Denmark's experiences with creating a sustainable society and connect with the solution providers that make it possible.